Accession number 13932, Reel 1.
Mr. Ashcroft, Reel 1. Can you tell me how and when you joined the army, please?
Yes, I was working in London, and I was thinking about joining the RAF at one time, and as a volunteer in the RAF, just at the beginning of the war, and the RAF unit that I wanted to get in was full. It was a territorial volunteer unit, and I decided that I'd just wait and join the army. And of course, I was caught up in the conscription, and I joined the army in 1940.
What had been your reaction to the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I'd spent some time in Germany before the war. As a young man, I used to go youth hosteling, and I'd met the Hitler Youth. I'd stayed in youth hostels with the Hitler Youth. I'd seen the aspect of Nazi Germany. I'd seen that the trains ran on time. I'd seen the Autobahn. And as a youngster, you were quite impressed with the sort of parry and thrust of the sort of new Germany. I'd witnessed also in cities in Germany a lot of even the Jewish people there were worried, and I'd met racialism, hostility. I'd been down the Rhine and I'd seen notices outside swimming pools, Jews and dogs verboten, and I'd been in youth hostels with the Hitler Youth. So I had seen that sort of Germany. So it came as no surprise to me. And also, I'd met people in London who had suffered under the Nazi regime. Came in 1938, 1939, people of Jewish extraction coming over to London, being associated with movements like Tok H, that I'd heard of the horrors of the concentration camp. And it seemed also incredible, but this was the first account of young people. I'm talking of people in my own age group then of about 20, 21, 22, and listening to these horror stories of the concentration lagers, it was all incredible. So my attitude that it was a just war, in felt as a young man, I felt it was a more just war than probably the 1418 war. But I knew that there was a lot of persecution in Germany. I'd also travelled in other parts of Germany, and I'd witnessed, travelling in the trains in Germany, young Hitler youth telling me that Czechoslovakia would be absorbed, and described him what was going to happen, and this was 6 months or a year before it actually happened. And there was this expansion of colonial Germany, and my attitude was that it was a just war and we'd got to put halt to it.
Had you been impatient with the policy of the British government prior to the 3rd of September 1939?
Yes, I was tempted as a youth at that time that one could join these peace movements, the Peace Pledge Union, if I remember rightly. A lot of the youngsters join, but I steered away from that. I also saw the marches in the East End of London of Mosley's fascist. I also saw the communist marches. I witnessed seeing Mosley walk down Tottenham Court Road. We saw all this. We saw on the street corners the fascist agitators talking about what they were doing. And it was quite impressive. So I'd had a good background to what was going on. But I did feel there was a certain amount of appeasement going. I listened to Churchill at the Mansion House in, I think it was probably 1938, when they had the vast territorial drive on recruitment, we must be strong, and, you know, Nazi Germany and all this sort of thing. And I certainly took that to heart and listened, and it came as no surprise. But I believe that we were defenceless. We were running our defences down, and we were lucky, really, to to achieve what we achieved in 1939 and 40.
So you told me about how you came to be in the army.
Mm.
Can you tell me about the training that you had in the army and what you thought of its quality?
Yes. Well, I did join the London Irish Rifles. And the only reason why I could think that I would been selected for the London Irish Rifles that my grandmother's name was McNulty. I used to joke about that. But I joined the London Irish Rifles, and this was quite... I'd had a before experience of sort of community living, but this really opened my eyes when I went along to Chelsea Barracks and saw the motley of my age group who were ready to entrain down to the Sussex coast as recruits for the London Irish Rifles Training Company. It was quite an experience for me, seeing this quite mixed bunch of people. And thereafter we did our... Do you want me to continue on?
Please.
Yes, thereafter we did our basic training, and it installed some discipline into me. Also, I found then, and much later, that my training in the scout movement did much, especially when it came down to fieldcraft. But, of course, when we were in Chichester Bognor Regis we were at, of course, it was mainly training. And I just spent the basic training, and it was very interesting. I took some pyjamas, jokingly, down. When they said what you had to carry, I took pyjamas. And I don't think... When I started to get undressed the first night, I had two chaps standing over me saying, he's getting dressed to go to bed. There's something wrong here, mate, isn't there? And anyway, we took it in good heart. And it was quite an experience for me of sort of plural living.
But you weren't persecuted because...
I was not persecuted. I was very much at home. I was able to impersonate a lot of the Irish element there, the London Irish. And I could... I also took part in the various sports and also got involved in the battalion concert parties, which was always a good thing for mixing people together. But there was no problem. No problem.
Did you see anything of the men coming back from Dunkirk?
Yes, I did. At that time, after my training, as I'd been in Germany, they put me on a German interrogation course as a battalion interpreter for prisoners, if we captured any parachutists, to interrogate them. And so they decided that as I'd been to Germany, and I think I was the only one in the company that had probably ever been over the Channel at that time, and they decided to put me in the intelligence section, which was, of course, a rather elite battalion section. And, of course, we were doing other interesting work. And but at that time, of course, we were on the defence of the South Coast. And I was stationed in a Martello Tower. And as a section, I think I was a Lance Corporal then. I was getting ready to go to officer training, but in coast defence. And my section had a job of anti-submarine patrol. And what they expected us to do, I don't know, but we were armed with just 303 rifles. And we had to patrol the coast, about 4 or 5 miles of the coast, along the Dymchurch and Romney, the miniature railway down there, and look out for submarines. What we were expected to do, I don't know. I used to tell the chaps, well, if you see the periscope, fire at the periscope, and probably he'll disappear. But that was in Kent in 1940.
Did you personally think that the Germans would invade?
Well, being in the intelligence section, of course, we had reports that there was a possibility of invasion. We do know, too, that intelligence reports there was a build-up of an on the French coast that Hitler had ordered the invasion, and we actually had information and the possibilities of where an invasion could take place, and I think it was a very real thing. We used to say, well, Napoleon made an attempt to invade us, but we really thought at that time, when our backs were at the wall, it was a real possibility. And I believe the invasion, I think he called it Exercise Sea Lion, Hitler. I believe he had that well in gear, and it was only as a result of our determination and probably the bombing of the Channel ports that stopped him doing it. We were on our own. Britain, it was, well, it was Great Britain after the fall of France. It was Great Britain, alone in the Western world.
Did you ever interrogate a German?
Yes, I did, but that was on the... yes, I did indeed. There was, I was stationed just outside Faversham in Kent, and an ME-109 was shot down in the battalion area, and they went out and collected the pilot's office, and he came in, and I did ask him a few words of, you know, where he was from, what his number was, and sort of in the guard room before he was sent off to the prisoner of war cage. So that was my first experience. And later on in Normandy, I had an opportunity of talking to the prisoners.
Was that in the Battle of Britain when you interrogated the pilot?
It was, yes, because we were on the Kent coast, of course, and that was the days that, of course, the daylight raised by the Luftwaffe.
What was the demeanour of this pilot? Was he...
He was very cooperative. He was highly suspicious. I think he thought that he wasn't quite sure what was going to happen to him, especially when he knew he'd been captured by an Irish regiment. And I gathered that he was a volunteer pilot, and he'd been a butcher in Stuttgart or something, or whether he'd owned a butcher's shop or something, but. He was quite cooperative, and it was a novelty to us to see a German look at him, look at his uniform and talk to him. And, of course, the intelligence officer was a fluent speaking German, and, of course, he got much more information than we did in our limited...
Were all the people in your Irish regiment totally loyal to the cause of the war?
Absolutely, I would say. In fact, yes, because they were either regular soldiers of the Royal Ulster Rifles, or their parents were Irish in London. In fact, it was a multiple. We had Cockneys, Welsh, Irish, Scottish, but mainly of Irish extraction. They were very loyal indeed.
So they wanted to see the war won just as much as any other regiment?
Indeed, indeed. In fact, we had the people in the regiment from the era, and of course came over as volunteers, and they used to go and leave, and somehow they got back to Southern Ireland again. But they too, Southern Ireland provided an awful lot of volunteers for the British Army, as you know.
How did you become an officer?
How did I become an officer? Well, the joke is that... in those days, they asked us if we'd like to consider going for a commission. And then we went up to a series of tests in various, I think they call them WASBs, the War Office Selection Boards. And we had to answer various questions. There was the interviews. Some of the questions I thought they were asked bore no resemblance to the task ahead. For example, one officer asked me, did I like swimming in the sea with girls? Well, I thought, well, there must be some good answer to this. That was one of them.
What did you answer?
Yeah, one had... at the time, I think I said something depending on the warmth of the water. They probably thought, well, this chap does think about these things. Then we had another colonel ask me, of course, the military questions of did I like rowing. Well, fortunately, boy, I'd done an amount of rowing in a local lake. So I said, yes, I like rowing. And I was very hesitant, but the question wasn't thrown at me, do I play polo and things like that. I think there was a great gap between the regular army and the territorial army. But we overcame these things, and I was accepted for general officer cadet training.
Were you trained at Sandhurst?
Yes. In those days, yes, I was in Camberley, and I thought this was a great honour. And attached to us, it was very intensive training, and in those days, the wartime one, it was called 161 Officer Cadet Training Unit, but it was at Sandhurst. You had all the facilities of Sandhurst, the traditions of Sandhurst. I felt very privileged to be there, and we had the sort of, they didn't call them batmen, but the ones that used to look after us and clean our equipment. And I had one that had been, he remembered Montgomery when he was a cadet there. I felt quite privileged talking to this old boy. But he said, you know, sir, he said, it's not the same since the gentleman went here.
Did you take offence?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I thought I was quite qualified. But there was that, but some of the instructors were very, very pre-war military. And some could barely speak with their affections. It was absolutely dreadful. And one, I often tell this story, I told it to my signalers afterwards, and it was about map reading, and we had this titled military officer coming in, I think he was a captain somebody, and he explained what his name was, because the spelling of his name was nothing like the pronunciation, so he would get that quite clear, that my name is Sansa. And he started off and he said, of course, it's about map reading, and without a map, you'll be absolutely lost. Well, that really set the tone, that think you'd be lost without a map. But it was a very mixed bunch. I think people of all different backgrounds were brought together. It was fascinating, challenging, but behind all that, there was one or two where the regular army, we used to call them blimps, I think, at one time. They were there, but I think they did a damn good job during the war, and their casualty rate was as high as anybody else. But that was Sandhurst. It was fascinating.
Did you feel that the training you got there prepared you to be an officer adequately?
I did, and I also felt that there was a lot of field craft out in the open, and I felt that my scout training was remarkable there, and how to make a fire by rubbing two matches together and bivouacking and becoming invisible and living off the land. Well, we did that in scouting as a boy. That was a great help. I believe at that time it did, because we had talks from various instructors that had been in France, the war. And, of course, the card, we had some of World War II, World War I. And there was quite a bit of trench work and digging trenches and a legacy of World War I, which, of course, later on, it virtually didn't exist because we didn't have trench warfare in that. But I think it did. It gave the training was good, very good.
Which regiment did you then go to?
Well, we had a selection. You had three selections. And I wanted to go. I put three regiments down. And I thought the logic of it is, if you ask for a northern regiment, you will be posted to the south. This seemed the pattern of things. the chaps would go to the, say, I'd like to go into the Northumberland Fusiliers, and they'd find themselves in Cornwall. Well, if he wanted to stay in the South, and I had every reason to stay in the, I wanted to stay in the South then, I said, well, I'll go for my county regiment, the 40th of Foot, because I know that I should be posted to the South of England. So I was posted to the Orkney Isles in the 9th Battalion of the South Lancashire Regiment of the 40th of Foot in the Orkneys, in Orkney and Shetland Defence Force, guarding the Scarpa Flow.
So, presumably, this was not regarded as a plum posting.
I think to get into to some it wasn't a plum posting. The only thing, on the credit side, it was considered as an overseas station at that time, and you got free cigarette allowances, and it was considered as an overseas. So in that way, there was the bonus. But it was a fascinating part of the world in the Orkney Islands. Reading a newspaper at 2 o'clock in the morning and seeing all the facilities and the fleet, of course. And it was a fascinating but fairly rough existence up there at that time in sort of camps for the military. But good training. And, of course, the most dreadful thing was the crossing of the Pentland Forth by ship. It was a very rough crossing normally. It was a ghastly crossing, especially in the winter.
Now, can we go on to the D-Day preparations and how
yes.
you came to be involved with those, please?
Yes, well, they did call for a cadre to join the 1st Battalion of the South Lancashire Regiment, and, of course, there was the LIFO, last in, first out, and the three officers that were posted to the 1st Battalion were of a lower age group. I should say here that a lot of the 9th Battalion officers were in their 30s and 40s. It was a more mature officer cadre battalion, and it was also took one or two Category B soldiers as well. Now, the 1st Battalion, so last in, first out, I was one of the three officers, formed a replacement to the 1st Battalion of the South Lancashire Regiment. They were at Folkestone in Kent at that time, and that was my first contact with them, with the 3rd British Infantry Division. So we were posted from north to south, so I got my southern posting, again, the law, South Lancashire Regiment in Folkestone, which proved my rule that a northern regiment would be somehow posted in the south. So I joined the 1st, which was a very professional battalion.
In what way?
They had a lot of long-serving soldiers, and the NCOs were of the highest quality. And, of course, the non-commissioned officers of any unit, if you have good NCOs, you've usually got a very good unit indeed. They were experienced. They'd a lot of them been evacuated from Dunkirk with the 1st Battalion, and a lot of the officers had had war experience. So we joined as very junior officers, but we felt that we were going into an exceptionally good unit. And we started training for D-Day, and my first experience of action was I was a guard commander on the docks at Folkestone, and I was bombed by the guns from across the channel. And one bomb landed just on the jetty at Folkestone and filled the guard room full of dust. It was a very absent, never seen anything like it. You couldn't see through the wooden building that it had absolutely blown all the dust of the building, and we felt it was very near. And that was, of course, it had struck also the pier and the railway line going down to Folkestone Harbour. And within 48 hours, it had the railway company in mending a line which was not used at that time, which made me think that they were keeping Folkestone for something, and it was all repaired again. But that was my first being near Shell Farm.
Would they shell every day?
Well, I can't remember every day, but I can remember being in Folkestone and sheltering in a railway cutting while the cross-country channels, but mainly they were targeting on Dover, I think. Dover had the probably more bombing, more shelling than Folkestone. But those channel guns, when you think they can travel what's about 35 miles across, it seemed quite incredible to me.
Was much damage and casualties caused?
I don't recall many casualties, although I remember reading a lot about Dover, but I don't remember much seeing any damage at all, except my personal experience here.
How did your D-Day preparations start?
Well, they started, you could say, right away, and I think that from Folkestone, we were on, of course, coastal defence, and I've mentioned the German coastal guns. And from Folkestone, we went up, we started our training vigorously, because originally we were told we were going to join the Fifth Army in Italy, and we were all geared up for that. In fact, we had many sort of pre-embarkation leaves. And then it was all changed because Montgomery came back to take charge, I think, of the 3rd Division. And we were told then that we were going to be held for the eventual assault on the Atlantic Wall in Europe. But we were from Folkestone, we went up to Granton-on-Spey. And this then started a most vigorous system of training. We attended a divisional battle school at Moffat under very active conditions. We spent a lot of time in the damp, misty hills, also training in areas where the Royal Engineers had constructed a sort of an Atlantic Wall for us, and we did assaults on the Atlantic Wall. We did combined operations with the Royal Navy on the west coast of Scotland. We were moved about Scotland by special train, north to Inverness. We went out on combined operations out to the islands of Rum. From there, we were brought down to just north of Dumfries. This was prior to our move south. We took part in invasion exercises in the Kyles of Bute. We sailed from Arderossen to Tignabruich, and it was there in the north, in the Moray Firth. We joined up also with our Navy colleagues in Force S, which was to be virtually our escorting force over to the D-Day beaches. And we married up with the specialist units for the landing on the beaches, for example, the 13th, 18th Hussars, these are the swimming tanks, the various beach area groups, the port operating group, anti-aircraft regiments, medium regiments of the Royal Artillery, Special Service Commander Brigade, this is where I saw Lord Lovat for the first time with his troops. All this was terribly impressive. And also Hobart's Funnies, the 5th Assault Regiment of the Royal Engineers, Field Gunners, and other supporting units, including very sophisticated medical units as well. And we were all together in Scotland over a wide area, and we met for these exercises. And I've made an error there. Monty actually was appointed